It is winner take all time in the NBA and NHL, and FanDuel is giving you a shot to bring home a big win of your own. Because right now, new customers get $150 in bonus bets with any winning $5 bet. That's $150 to bet on spreads, money lines, player props, and more. Just visit FanDuel.com/247, make every playoff shot count. FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook.
Must be 21 plus and present in Ohio. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. A bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
I'm Kim Grinnells of Dogman.com with Chris Fetter, Scott Eklund. Cal comes to town, 6:30 kickoff at Husky Stadium. Expect the temperatures to be in the mid to high 70s Saturday, which unlike last Saturday, which was just a disaster, especially in the first half, a lot of storm warnings kept a lot of people away. Talking to a UW official earlier today, expecting about the same ticket sales, right around 63,000 tickets distributed. I expect there to be more of a crowd with the good weather, but, 6:30 kickoff at Husky Stadium, and Cal and Scott, we talked about this earlier. Just when Cal comes to town or we go to Cal, strange things happen. What do you remember about a Cal game? What jumps out at you? Something strange other than the Lightning game a couple years ago?
Well, a big thing was Chris Peterson's decision to put Jake Haener in, a guy who had never once seen a snap in a football game at the collegiate level, putting him in with Washington leading. And he throws a pick six to Evan Weaver, and that guy was a Husky killer when he was playing against Washington. I think he went 2-1 against Washington, might have been 3-0 against the Huskies. But, Washington just has struggled against Cal for whatever reason. They're a program with the same philosophy as Washington. Their program has the same values, and they have the same culture around their program that Washington does. And so, honestly, there's not a lot different between these two programs if you talk about culture and coaching and that kind of stuff. So, Cal has had Washington's numbers the past few years, but I think tonight's game is going to be a pretty good one.
What stands out to you, Chris?
Well, you mentioned the Lightning game, but how can you not forget that one, especially in the media when I don't remember when the game finished, but what was it, between 1:30 and 2?
Yeah.
We were there until four or five in the morning.
Stupid o'clock. Yeah.
And even tonight, the game starts at 6:30. We usually account for 7 hours from the start of the game. So I probably won't get back to my car until at least 1:30, maybe 1 to 1:30. So it's always a long day when it's a night game. Thankfully, it's not a 7:30 game. It's a 6:30 game, so small mercies, I guess, for that. But, yeah, there definitely is some weird things. You even go back to the game at Cal when Sark decided to go for it with God's play, and Jake Locker drove that big drive down the field, the huge play to Jermaine Kearse, catching it on his shoe tops, and that was the start of a nice run to end that season. So, yeah, definitely some weird finishes. Shoot, you can go all the way back to the 1991 season, 30 years ago. The one game that really, really gave Washington fits in that championship year was California. And and California gave them all they could handle that year. Washington, the history and tradition behind Washington Cal is well established. I put a story out earlier in the week about the top, the last 10 games. Recaps the last 10 games between these two teams, and there's been some real barn burners.
Yeah, a couple things that stand out just back in the day, when nobody was at the Cal games, nobody, and they had the microphones hanging to pick up the crowd noise, and they would kind of turn it up and run it through the speakers to make it seem like there was a lot more people there than there was and create some noise. I remember, Javid Best? I think he ran for 200 yards in the first half. And he just tore Washington up and looked like the defense didn't even want to play. Marshawn Lynch getting on the golf cart and driving all around. I'm surprised he didn't hit anybody. God's play, you know, after Tyrone sucked the soul from the team and didn't have any confidence. Sark on fourth and one, last play of the game. He's going for it, you know. He's just going for it because he wanted to instill the confidence in the guys. Unlike Tyrone, when was it? The year before where they score on the last play of the game. It was Carl Bonnell to – who was the wide receiver? Marlon – do you remember who it was?
Marlon Wood.
Marlon Woods, yeah. And for some reason, you know, Tyrone's got to control everything. And instead of going for two while Cal's on his heels defensively, goes by for the extra point and they lose in overtime. And then Cal Stadium, also the home of Tyrone's last game and the infamous stare down with Hugh Millen. But, you know, that's another story for another day. But there just always seems to have weird stuff happen with Cal. So, you know, looking forward to that game today. Again, weather should be great. And, I think, again, you know, when after the Montana game, we thought that the Michigan game, I thought the Michigan game would show what this team was. Was that what they were, or is that what they did against Michigan, you know, against Montana? So losing to Montana, losing to Michigan, and then, you know, beating a really bad Arkansas State team, Cal's going to be a little bit more of a test, you guys.
Absolutely. I think we're going to see really what this team is made of this week, because this is a team that has they don't have as much talent as Washington, but they're well coached. They've got some talent on the offensive side of the ball. Their defense is a little lacking as compared to previous years, but they've got good coaching. They've got some talent on that team. You know, as far as, you know, beating a bad Arkansas State team, okay, you can say they're a bad team, and they are. They're not a very good team. But they have a lot more talent, pure raw talent, than Montana did. And so if Washington just comes out and plays remotely as well as they did against Arkansas State, Washington should blow Montana out of the water. And if that had happened, we'd be talking about a 2-1 program. You know, I was talking with someone last night or on Thursday night, sorry, and, you know, we were talking about what the season would look like right now if Washington had blown out Montana, blown out Arkansas State, and had like a 7-10 point loss at Michigan on the road where they look competitive. And you'd be really excited about getting into conference play. But as it is right now, Washington's 1-2. They lose to Montana and Michigan. Didn't seem that into the game against Michigan, even though the final score wasn't completely out of hand. But, you know, Washington just, they need a win. They need to beat this Cal team. And Kim, like you said, they need to be 3-2 by the time they go into that bye week after games against Cal tonight and Oregon State next Saturday night. So big couple of weeks for the Huskies before they head into the bye.
Hey, Scott, real quick, you know, Chris Brown was a guy that, you know, did some damage. Washington recruited heavily. He's a big running back. Did you notice him in the depth chart at all for Cal?
No, didn't he graduate?
He's Chris Brooks now.
He changed his name.
Oh, okay. See, I didn't even know that.
I didn't realize that you were actually offering a trick question there, Kim. That was good.
Yeah. Chris, is there anybody on the Washington roster that would benefit from changing their last name?
I don't know.
On the coaching staff.
We've seen some that have changed their names before, obviously. Hauoli Jamora went to Hauoli Kekaha. So that has happened before. And I don't know the story why, Chris Brown changed his name to Christopher Brooks. I'm sure he has an extremely good reason for doing
John,
so.
I think John Donovan should change his name to John Smith.
It may be John Doe here pretty soon if things don't start to turn around. But, yeah, it's interesting. This game with Cal is very, very, It's definitely a situation where both teams really need this game to jumpstart their seasons, because their seasons are kind of going along similar paths, yet they've kind of gotten there in different ways. And their teams, even though they want to try to do similar things and are kind of built similar ways, they really don't do the same things very well. Like, you know, California has shown that they can really run the ball. Washington hasn't shown that they can run the ball at all. At least the way that they want to. And yet Washington has shown, at least in the last game, that they can really throw the ball downfield and they can actually set up the run via the pass, which is something that Cal can't do, even though they've got a 3-year starter in Chase Garber's coming back. So this has got a lot of intriguing storylines to it in terms of, you know, teams going in similar directions, yet kind of getting there in different ways. And, but yet both of them really, really need this game badly.
Scott, Chase Garber, does it seem, how many, has he been there 8 years or 9 years?
No, 4 years.
Okay. It just seems like he's been down there forever.
Five years. Sorry about that. I guess this would be 6 years if you include last year, but yeah.
Yeah, I asked Jackson Moore, who covers the team, by the way. Did you listen to the interview with
– I have not. Nope.
So just real quick, off topic, but Jackson also covers Fresno State. You know, he's dealing with Jake Hainermania down there.
Mm-hmm.
Were you aware that the mayor showed up on Monday and named it Jake Hainer Week?
Nope, I was not.
Jake Hainer Week in Fresno, so I sent a text to Jacob Eason, haven't heard back, that he may have won the job, but he never had a week named after him. So. Mm-hmm. But
I feel very confident that Jake Hainer would never have been – there would never have been a Jake Hainer week in Seattle.
Yeah, I don't think so.
I feel
so
pretty
either.
Confident in saying
yeah.
that.
Yeah, he had a week. He had a week. He had a week. But
I think in Fresno, they might have a lot more weeks open to them. Yeah. I'm just guessing, though. I'm just guessing.
Yeah, but I talked to Jackson about Chase Garbers. You know, has he peaked out or is he continuing to get better? But sounds like he's playing pretty well. I'm not sure that he has the weapons, but, you know, Chase Garber could throw the ball.
Yeah, he can. I mean, he's got some big receivers and he's got some smaller guys who they like to use out of that slot spot. Nico Remigio, that guy is explosive, super explosive as a player. He had a kick return for a touchdown last week. Then he's got Trayvon Clark, 6'4", 195 pounds. He's got Jeremiah Hunter, 6'2", 200 pounds. He's got Tommy Christakos, 6'4", 210. Those are all some guys in the depth chart right now. They've got some big receivers that can get down the field, but they aren't as dynamic as the guys that we've seen in previous years. Now, Clark is the guy who really is the kind of big play guy. I think he's averaging 22 yards a catch, and he has a couple touchdowns receiving. You know, and he's one of the reasons that they almost beat TCU, but you know, overall, this group is not as deep as it's been in previous seasons when you have guys like DeSean Jackson out there running around doing their thing.
Yeah, I just was going to say that, you know, it's interesting that Remigio was the guy that, you know, used to be the one that took the top off defenses early on for Cal. Now he's become more of their possession guy, more of the Terrell Bynum go-to. You know, that's the guy that Garbers is going to try to look to first. And then Trevon Clark is the guy that kind of opens things up for them down the field. Also, don't forget about Jake Tonjes too. I like him a lot at tight end. In terms of the ability to be a receiving target and to do some damage for Cal, he's very like Cade Otton and what Washington tries to do with Otton in their offense. He's kind of their tight end go-to guy in terms of down the field trying to catch the ball.
Scott, how comfortable do you feel with those two corners on the wide receivers, Chase Garbers back there and just leaving him on an island with, you know, McDuffie and Kyler Gordon and Bookie and just really shutting down the run?
Well, you know, I'd like to see it. I think, you know, one of the things that I saw from as good as I think Trent McDuffie is, he hasn't proven that he's able to cover some of those bigger receivers very well. He did against Stanford. They kind of exploited him a few times and things like that. I think this is a game for him to be on Jeremiah Hunter, who's 6'2", 200, and for Kyler Gordon to be on Trayvon Clark, the 6'4", 195-pounder. If that's who you can lock up, and they don't get real imaginative with a lot of their route combinations and their tree and everything like that. So I think Washington's got a good chance to lock some of those guys down, but we'll have to see because they do get open. But I think it's more when you're running zone instead of man-to-man.
Chris, last week we did not see Dominique Hampton, and I'm sure it has something to do with the absolutely brain fart at Michigan with the personal foul penalty for taunting. You expect to see Dominique Hampton back there this week?
Possibly, but there's so many other guys at safety that are playing in front of him. I mean, you've got Julius Irvin, who's making a great play for it. He got the first interception against Arkansas State. Cameron Williams has really shown himself to be a real solid piece back there now that he's 100% healthy. You've got Asa Turner back there. Alex Cook, who was a special teams player of the week last week for the punt block. He's obviously been a factor back there as well. So you've got all those guys. And then Cam Fabiculainen, who is working not just with nickel, with Bookie Bradley Hiles at the nickel, but can be back there as well if they run quarters or whatever type of coverage you want. To be honest, guys, you know, you talk about stopping the run with Cal, and I think that's something they absolutely have to do. I think, you know, maybe last year or the year before, you wouldn't have necessarily wanted to have Chase Garbers win the game for them because he's really good with his feet too. So unless you spy him, you know, he might cause you some damage. But I almost think that as good as they're running the ball right now, you may want to, instead of putting that extra defensive lineman in, like instead of bringing Fatui Tuatele in and taking Bookie out, you know, last week was a breakout game for Carson Bruner. Why not bring Bruner in with Ulofosio and Sermon and have more guys kind of being able to go sideline to sideline as well as fitting in the gaps and instead of having that extra down lineman? I'm kind of wondering what you guys think of that.
I say stay with what you do best, and that nickel package has served them well over the years. I say stick with it.
Even against a run-heavy team.
I don't think you're going to see a run-heavy team with Cal. I think you're going to see Chase Garbers try to throw the ball downfield. I anticipate them seeing a real balanced offense. I would imagine that they're going to run the ball just as much as they're going to throw the ball unless they get behind, and then I think you're going to see them throw the ball more.
Yeah, I agree with Chris, though. I think we're going to get a heavy dose of run until Washington proves they can stop the run. They did it against Arkansas State last week, but Arkansas State isn't a running team. They're a throwing team. So, you know, Washington was – the last time they faced a team that liked to grind it out on the ground, they gave up 343 yards. So if I'm Cal, I'm running the ball until Washington proves they can stop my run.
Yeah, and I don't disagree, Kim. I think that obviously Chase Garbers will throw back and pass. I think that Washington and California offensively in terms of philosophy – I think are very similar. They want to run pro style. They want to be balanced. They want to try to keep the defenses off guard. But California has run the ball almost 180 yards a game compared to 105 for Washington. California is going to establish their run. They're going to do it, and I agree with Scott. They're going to do it, and they're going to keep doing it, even if they don't necessarily have some success early, because they know if they eventually get some run, that's going to open a lot of things up for Garbers.
Yeah, but the thing of it is, too, the way I look at it, like stay with what you know, they've been pretty successful, you know, over the past few years on, you know, not giving up a lot of runs running the nickel package.
Well, people will talk to you about Stanford last year as being the reason why Bob Gregory came out in spring and said the number one thing they had to get accomplished was to be better in run defense. There's no other reason for him to say that, Kim, unless they felt like they were deficient in that area. Yeah. And I think a lot of fans would agree with that.
Yeah, I also wanted to get back to Dominique Hampton a little bit. You know, we see that he didn't play this past week. And last year with Richard Newton, we saw Richard Newton held out for some reason or another. Are you sensing that Jimmy Lake might have a little bit of a doghouse?
Well, oh, for sure.
Yeah, but I mean, if you listen to what Jimmy said on Monday, someone asked him about Dominique Hampton not playing, and he said, if you don't keep your poise and you break our trust, then you're going to sit until you earn our trust back. And that's the situation with Dominique Hampton right now. Could I think he will.
I think, you know, since, you know, Chris Peterson and Jimmy Lake here, I think there's been some other guys that have kind of broken the trust too, you know, and we may not have seen it, you know, because they weren't guys that, you know, they weren't the top guys on the team, but I think we've seen it before.
Sure. Absolutely seen it before. We've even seen it in games. I remember back in 15 when Washington traveled to USC and won that game. When Jake Browning was a true freshman going on the road and getting that really key win, you know, there were some penalties against some of the guys that were blitzing, whether it was Littleton or Azeem Victor. You know, some guys got pulled out of that game. Now, I'm not saying that they got punished in future games because I don't believe they did, but you saw the reaction from Chris Peterson on the sideline directly. I'm pretty sure that death stare from Peterson was one of the first real times that Washington fans saw him live on the sideline, basically not putting up with any of that stuff.
Yeah.
And basically with his eyes telling those guys, there's absolutely no place for it, and you're going to go sit until we figure this thing out. So I think there was kind of a simulated version of a quote unquote doghouse, if you want. I just don't think that Dominique Hampton's going to sit any longer than they need to in terms of like a disciplinary type thing. But Kim, again, I think it goes back to what I said originally. I just think there's a lot of guys in front of him. I'm trying to figure out an avenue where he gets in the game. And I think whether it's bringing in another inside linebacker like a Carson Bruner or a bigger safety like a Dominique Hampton, if they feel like he can go down into the box and really cause some problems that way, I think that could be a positive. If they think they spy a chink in the armor when it comes to Cal's offensive line, and I think Cal's offensive line's been pretty solid so far this year. Like I said, giving up, you know, they're going for almost 180 yards on the ground, about 440 yards total offense. They're scoring, you know, over 30 points a game, so that, you know, they're getting some points on the board. I just wonder how they're going to kind of approach things to try to stop this run game, because that, I think that's going to be first and foremost for Bob Gregory. He's going to want to stop that run.
Scott, you've brought it up numerous times, you know, the ability to stop the run. They've had guys like Danny Shelton, Vita Vea, Greg Gaines last week, you know, a couple of years ago with Levi Onwuzurike. They don't have that. I'm not seeing a guy on the defensive line that is an absolute lock to be an NFL draft pick at this point in time. I think there's some guys with potential, but is talent an issue along the defensive line? Do you see an NFL surefire guy along the defensive line?
Not a surefire guy right now, but I think Quo Pehapa, he definitely has that. He sure looks like a guy that could be pretty special on that D line. But, you know, Kim, you said it. I mean, Tuli, Letu Ligasanoa, Sam Taimani, Fa'atui Tuitele, and, the other one. Anyway, they're
Jacob Bandis?
Yeah, Jacob Bandis.
The other one.
Yeah. Sorry, I just was totally drawn a blank, but I've said it several times. There's not someone special up there. There are guys who can make plays, and I think the play that Fa'atui Tuitele made last week on the quarterback way outside the tackle box, Carson Bruner should have had the sack. I think the quarterback's wishing that he had gone down with that, but instead Tuitele just blows him up, forces the fumble, and Braylon Trice goes the other way. What was it, 66 yards for a touchdown? And you know, there's just no one special though that's going to eat up blocks, get penetration, and cause problems. Tuli Letulikasanoa didn't even start last week. So, is he in the doghouse? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't think those guys, they rotate him in. So,
but he didn't start. And that's weird because usually when he's healthy or not in the doghouse, he's starting. So maybe he isn't healthy, 100% healthy. I mean, it's the same with, it was the same with Edefuan Ulufosio, and he doesn't start, and Jimmy Lake says he's our starter. So, you know, we'll just have to see. But, no, I don't think there's anyone special right now up front. I think they have the potential to be, but right now there's no one that's a difference maker that can really rake some havoc up front and cause problems for the running game.
Scott, I mean, Chris, there has not been a lot of sacks this year, and that's something that this defense has been able to do over the past several years, but we're just not seeing it this year. You know, Jimmy Lake and Akaika Molloy, you know, they sing the praises of Braylon Trice. We haven't seen it yet. Seems like teams are focusing on Ryan Bowman quite a bit, and he's had a difficult time. He's had some holding penalties against him, but we're just not seeing the penetration. We're not seeing the pass rush. What are you seeing on that?
Yeah, there's only been four sacks so far. You know, one of them by a defensive lineman, which was Tuitele. Cooper McDonald has one as well. The other ones are Jacoby Covington had the one, and Bookie, Riley Hiles. You know, you talk about Trice. Trice is the one that had the, I think it was 72-yard fumble return against Arkansas State. So there is something to be in terms of being Johnny on the spot when a player like Tuitele can separate the ball from the quarterback and be right there to pick it up and score, because that's, you know, all the defensive coaches will tell you their number one mandate on the defense is to score or get the ball back. That's exactly what they're talking about. They need to obviously create more turnovers. You know, right now, California is the one, is the team that's on the positive side of the turnover battle. And that was one of my big keys to the game, is that Washington absolutely has to win that turnover battle. They have to be patient on offense. If they don't get a first down, just play field position. Don't try to push things, because we've seen when Dylan Morris tries to push things, that can be a problem. Especially if he tries to go downfield a little bit, we've seen him throw into double coverage. We even saw it against Arkansas State. So, sometimes he gets a little locked in on Cade Otton, for instance, or Terrell Bynum, and tries to find that go-to guy that he really likes. So, you know, getting the turnovers is big. Sacks, as you talked about, is going to be another, thing that they need to really, really focus on. You know, Kaika Molloy said a lot of really, really nice things about Braylon Trice, in fall camp, and we got to see that come to fruition. And if it wasn't for those holding penalties, Ryan Bowman probably have two or three sacks by now. So, getting Zion Tupou-Fatui can't come soon enough for these guys. And I suspect that he'll probably be available after the bye week.
We did not see Hayner Mania up in, the state of Washington. We didn't see, Jake Hayner week up in Washington, but the closest we got to it is McGrew Mania. Fans are just all singing the praises of Sean McGrew. You know, you're just what do you think of all that, Chris? Just fans just they want Sean McGrew.
Well, it's interesting because Jimmy Lake said the reason Sean McGrew played, and as well as Kamari Pleasant, was because of what they showed on special teams, which allowed them to get some reps at running back. The coaches are gonna die on that hill, that you're gonna play if you practice like you really, really want to play. And I know fans just don't buy that idea that practice time is going to earn you playing time, but that's the hill these guys die on. You know, they want to see guys practicing like they want to play and how they want to play, and they want to see everyone be like Buda Baker. I mean, I keep saying it time and time again. Buda Baker is like the ultimate practice player, because he practiced like he played. He stayed after. He did all those extra things. You know, we heard last week, guys, about how all those players, and I know, Scott, you noticed because you were there for one of the media sessions, and you had to wait a lot longer than normal for a couple guys to show up because they were there working with the jugs machine, or they were there doing a lot of extra stuff after practice. These are the kinds of things that the coaches want to see in order for them to place their trust that the players are going to get the job done. Running the ball flat out, Sean McGrew is the one that has the best vision. He's shown it year after year after year. He's clearly not the biggest guy. He may not even be the fastest guy in that group anymore. But he is the guy that will rack up yards and yards because he can make people miss. And that's the key thing that Sean McGrew can do for you. And it is kind of funny because you get in those third and one, third and two situations, who's the guy that usually moves the chain? It's the guy like Sean McGrew, because the defense can't necessarily get a handle on him, whereas the bigger guys might get stopped because they're running more straight up. They're an easier target to tackle. And even though they may be bigger, they don't use that bulk to their advantage. Whereas a guy like Sean McGrew, he uses angles. He uses his vision. He uses his explosiveness. And he's been able to get the job done time and time again. So I understand why fans are shocked that the coaches won't use him. But again, they'll die on that hill. And if they don't show what they need to see in practice, they aren't going to play. Thankfully, Sean McGrew and Kamari Pleasant are starting to show it in practice. So I think we're going to see more and more of those guys as we go forward.
And just to follow up on what Chris said.
Scott, real quick before you go there, you were at all the fall camp practices. You were at all the spring ball. Did you see anything from Sean McGrew that would separate him from the other guys?
Not in fall camp, but that's because they didn't give him a lot of practice time. I mean, he wasn't running with the ones very much. But
yeah, they specifically gave Richard Newton and Cameron Davis all sorts of carries in the fall.
Yeah,
Pleasant and McGrew were not the focus of those turns at all.
But the thing is, I mean, just to echo what Chris said about Sean McGrew, I mean, that jump cut that he made on his touchdown run, that was ridiculous.
Yep.
That was an absolute you. And Richard Newton and Cam Davis. Now, Cam Davis might have that ability, but Richard Newton does not have that ability. Neither does Kamari Pleasant. And I don't know what JV on Sunday or Caleb Berry have, or for that matter, Emeka Megwa, now that he's enrolled. I don't
But Scott, we saw JV on Sunday at the end of the game against Arkansas State do some things outside. But when he tried to cut back in, boy, it didn't look anything like Sean McGrew.
No.
He was not cutting one footed. It was just kind of awkward because he was trying to stop his momentum and then go upfield.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't look at all like Sean McGrew. McGrew is just he's a smooth customer. And I think because he's smaller, I honestly do feel this, that the defenders just don't give him the benefit of the doubt. And then the next thing you know, they're tackling air. Because he's already 3 feet over to the side.
And see, all of this is presuming that the offensive line isn't getting pushed back into the backfield, which we've seen way too much of this year.
Well, I've seen, you know, to be honest with you, they still want to run a lot of those counters. They still want to use a lot of pulling guards and tackles and do those kinds of things. And frankly, I'm not seeing a real athletic offensive line that's that can pull these things off. No pun intended. No, you know, I wasn't trying to use that in a cute way. I just think, you know, you see a lot of the pulling guards and tackles trying to fill holes and trying to find guys. Same thing with the tight ends. I think the tight end blocking this year has been substandard compared to last year, for instance. And I know it's only four games, but I know that Cade Otten and Jack Westover and Devin Copeland, those guys, they showed much more in the blocking aspect of their position in 2020 than what they've shown so far this year. And I don't know if it's just a difference in how they're trying to be used in the scheme, but I see them come up with air going up against a body. And they're just going to have to continue to get better and better and better in that area, because if you're right, if they don't find a body that they can block and they can push around, they're going to get stuffed between the tackles, and it's already showing up the first three games of the season.
And Scott, you know, you've heard me say the brick wall numerous times, and that's what there's been quite a bit. But, you know, when we talked to Jimmy Lake, you know, he's always told us, you know, that the quarterback goes up to the line of scrimmage with a run play and a pass play, and he can check into one or the other or check out of one or another. And I asked Jimmy, you know, how after the Michigan game, how Dylan has been doing so far with checking into the right play. And he said about 50%. And that just seems really, really low, you know. And if you've got nine guys up in the box, you've got to get out of those plays. And if you've got the open passing lanes, you know, just what are you seeing from upstairs, you know, with him, you know, checking in and out of the right plays?
I don't know when he's checking in and out of the right plays, because I don't know the calls. But, I mean, it's pretty obvious that there's been a couple times when Washington has had an opportunity to make plays, and if Dylan had maybe called the right play or whatever, or changed them into something, they might have gotten points out of it. So I'm not going to sit here and say I know what they could be doing better or whatever, but I mean, it's pretty obvious that Washington has had the opportunity to make some plays and just hasn't gotten into the right plays because of the things that, you know, maybe Dylan Morris has fooled. So, you know, it's a growing process. You know, not all quarterbacks have this right away, and sometimes it takes a while, and it all comes through experience. It doesn't come from just studying things in a classroom and never doing it. You gotta do the film study, but then you also gotta do it on the field and see it on the field in real time. And this is the first time Dylan's seeing a lot of this stuff. I mean, this is going to be his eighth start. So
I guess the right question is, sitting up high like you are, you know, watching the games, can you tell what's coming? I mean, is the offense predictable? Have you been able to know?
Every now and then, yes, I can. But I've also seen the team a lot more than Cal or any of these other teams have. So, sure. You know, there's times when you're just like, it's pretty obvious what they're going to try and do here.
Yeah,
but go ahead, Chris.
So Scott, I was going to say just real quick, I think there's, you know, without knowing what they're going to get in and out of, obviously, because we're up there and we don't have headphones on to the booth. Bottom line is that when you're on schedule, it's so much easier to go in and out of things when you're on schedule and you know exactly what you're doing, you know exactly what you're looking for, and defenses have to defend you accordingly. Now, if you're behind schedule, if you're constantly in third and six or longer, you're giving the defense license to be as creative as they want to be as exotic as they want to be, to try to get after you. That's what we saw with Montana. We saw it a little bit with Michigan. They can, you know, take guys out of the box. They can come from the edges. They can blitz different guys. They can do a lot of things to you, and that screws up any attempt at a quarterback to try to predict or plan ahead in terms of what they see, what their shifts and their motions are going to try to tell them about what defense they're in, if they're in man or zone or what kind of concepts that they're in. Kim, a lot of that will be told whether or not you're in a third and short situation, a second and medium situation. Those types of situations are the things that tell me whether or not Dylan Morris is going to be in an advantageous position to check in and out of plays that they want to be successful in.
Right. And also, Scott, with the offense being so much more dynamic last week against Arkansas State, I know the opponent has something to do with that, but also the return of Jalen McMillan, you know, Terrell Bynum, and fingers crossed, we may see Romu Dunze this week. We will see. But how much of a difference did it make having Terrell Bynum and Jalen McMillan out there?
Oh, yeah, absolutely it did. And if they get Romu Dunze back, which there's some rumors flying around there that he might be back too, if Washington could get those three going and Jalen McMillan can stay healthy and continue his progress, Washington's offense, I think John Donovan is going to be a lot more willing to throw some passes down the field and try and stretch it than he was maybe in the first few games where they didn't have that. So, I think those guys being in definitely helped things last week, and it feeds off to the overall offense. I mean, Jimmy Lake said it on Monday that, you know, we have those guys to stretch the field. You hit a couple big plays, and then all of a sudden we're handing the ball off to a 220-pound running back, and he's able to get some space and get some ahead of steam going. And you know, it all kind of feeds off of each other. You can say that the pass sets up the run or the run sets up the pass, but they really feed off of each other. And however, whatever a team is trying to do to take it away, you've got to be able to do the other thing to set up the other one.
Chris, for a dollar, I'll bet you a dollar. Who has the most receptions for the game today? We'll do it for a dollar.
Cade Otton.
That's what I was going
to
say.
Well, but going back to McMillan.
Okay, I'll take McMillan.
Going back to McMillan really quick, he was the difference in the game for obvious reasons, and not just his production, but the fact that they were able to execute offensively goes to what Scott said in terms of balance. You will not have any balance at all, or be able to have a semblance of balance and try to keep defenses honest if you can't execute those plays. And by being able to execute deep, that opened up the entire field. And when you open up the entire field, you open up the entire playbook. That's just how it goes. I mean, it's just, you've got everything open to you now because they have to respect everything you do. It's just that simple. And by Jalen McMillan executing at a high level right from the jump, I mean the very first play that was targeted to him. And then on top of that, you get that opened up. Now you got the underneath stuff. You got the runs that can be opened up. Space is opened up. The whole thing feeds off itself. That's why Jalen McMillan was so important. But it comes down to execution. Doesn't matter if it's McMillan. It could have been Terrell Bynum. It could have been Taj Davis. It could have been Sawyer Racanelli. It could have been Jabez tonight. It could have been all those guys. It doesn't matter. You've got to have a guy that can step up and make a play when you need it. And the fact that Jalen McMillan made that play on the second series of the game against Arkansas State changed the whole tenor of that game. That's why, if I remember correctly, Scott, you can correct me, but I think that was the play of the game in your post-game analysis.
Yes, it was. It definitely was. And it kind of set the tone because Arkansas State was like, holy crap, what happened? Yeah. What do we do now?
And it's not like Washington can't do that against Cal. Now, you know, Cal is set up much in the same way Washington is in terms of their defense is really heavy in the back and talented in the back. And then you move a little bit closer to line of scrimmage and it's not quite as talented or a little thinner as you move up. Well, you know, Washington's obviously the same way, but Cal, you have to stretch them. You have to try to be able to get over the top. And obviously you want to execute it to the point where you're successful all the time and you're able to complete those deep passes and huge credit to Dylan Morris. I mean, this was the hole in his game. Yeah. People didn't think he could throw the ball downfield, and I think there was a lot of people out there that didn't think he could throw downfield because he didn't have a strong enough arm.
He's always
had a really strong arm. If anything, he just couldn't gauge it. It's like he knew he had it. He just couldn't dial it in to get the thing in sync with the receivers going down the field. So it was either underthrown or overthrown. Yep. He just couldn't get it on time. Every ball he threw down the field against Arkansas State felt like it was right on time. And
quick word with our sponsors, and when we return, we'll touch bases with Scott on what's going on recruiting. I know he's been out to some high school games here recently. And yesterday, George Kliafkoff met with the media. He's been in town all week meeting with Jimmy Lake, Mike Hopkins. I know when we were there yesterday, he had a ton of student athletes he was dealing with. So a lot of interesting stuff from George Kliafkoff. We'll go over that and more when we return. It's guys from Dogman.com on Dogman Radio.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Welcome back. I'm Kim Grinnell, along with Chris Fetter, Scott Eklund. Cal, Washington, 6:30 kickoff at Husky Stadium today. I'm warning you right up front. Concession lines will be long. Beer lines will be long. Every line will be long. Staffing is a huge issue, not only for the University of Washington, but it's a big issue for the Seahawks as well. And just, you know, some conversations with Jen Cohen. She was talking to some other athletic directors throughout the league on seeing if they had any suggestions. And they were asking her, it sounds like everybody's dealing with the same thing, not being able to get the proper staff in the stadium. So expect long lines. Eat before you go in. Grab the beer before you sit down, because the lines will be long. But, Scott, you had a chance to get out to some high school football games. You not only get to see guys up close and personally, but you talk to a lot of people. Can you update us a little bit on what's jumped out at you in the last day or so?
Well, definitely on Thursday night, saw two really good games down at, well, I shouldn't say really good games. They were kind of blowouts, but there were a lot of recruits on the field for all four teams. And, you know, Washington's, one of their commits, Vega Ijuane, he's an offensive lineman at Graham Kapowsin. He was on the offensive line and defensive line for the Eagles, and he faced off against Oregon commit Dave Iuli from Puyallup, who also played on offense and defense, although not as much as Vega did. And they didn't actually go toe-to-toe very often, if at all, because when each of them was on defense, they played inside, but when they were on offense, each played left tackle. So you didn't really see a lot of matchups between those two guys hitting each other, but I'll tell you what, I was very surprised at how good Vega Ijuane looked. He was probably about 350 when I saw him during the COVID lockdown last year, and he is not that anymore. He told Brandon Huffman he's about 315. He's lost a lot of weight. He's lost about 35 pounds, and from what I heard, the Hill brothers, there's two brothers down there who are the Hills, and they just kind of get after guys, and they're committed to Idaho State. They're not high-end guys, but they're just the engine that makes that thing go, both offensively and defensively. And apparently up until his junior year, when he would go in for workouts with the team, the Hill brothers would already be two or three sets in. Well, now, I guess this last offseason and this year so far, he's the one waiting for the Hill brothers to get in so that they can all lift together. And he's really kind of taken to that. He's focused on things. He was really getting after guys in the running game, blocking down the field, getting to the second level, didn't allow any pressures really off of the edge. It was an unbelievable performance by him. And then Dave Iuli on his side, this is not because he's an Oregon guy. I wanted Washington to recruit Dave Iuli, but they just didn't have enough room. He just didn't look like he was in shape. I think Oregon can get him in shape, and I think he'll do really well there. But as far as Thursday night is concerned, That was a dominant performance by Vega Ejuane. And I'm not saying he's going to be a four-star, but trust me, some people were there who can make him a four-star, and their eyes were opened a little bit.
Hey, Scott, with Ejuane, does he project more as like a maybe a right tackle at the next level, or is he an interior guy?
I think he could play right tackle, but I think he's probably a better fit inside, kind of like a Henry Bainuvalu, because – you know, Henry Bainuvalu has the size to play tackle, but he's just a better fit inside. And I think that's where Vega probably fits better because he's really aggressive. He likes to pull. He's got, you know, light feet, but I think he could play some right tackle. I just don't think he's a left tackle at the next level.
Scott, I know some people just think that Washington can take as many guys as they want, you know, but it doesn't work like that. The number were, first of all, how many are they going to take in this class? They've already taken two offensive linemen in Parker Brailsford, who was up for the Arkansas State game, and Vega Ejuane. So they've taken two. How many more offensive linemen are they taking? And they're only taking 15. Why are they only taking 15, Scott? They could take more. They could take everybody.
Because they can only have 85 men on the roster. I know that the NCAA is getting ready to pass a thing where you can sign up to 32 in a class now. Is that what I saw? Just the other day. But if you're up against the numbers, they're not increasing the amount of scholarship guys you can have on the roster. You can only have 85. And that's where Washington is really kind of pushing the limit. I think they're going to stick at 15 unless some guys that they don't think are going to leave end up leaving. I think you could see up to 17 in the class, but 15 is the number they're working on right now. Realistically, they're full along the offensive line, but they're going to take a guy like Josh Connerly no matter what. But, you know, as far as the offensive line, they're not really recruiting anybody else. The Keith Olsen, the kid from Napavine who's committed to USC, was at Washington's game against Arkansas State last week. I expect him to be here today or maybe at the UCLA game, the next home game after that. But, you know, he's definitely showing some interest in Washington, and they've been slowly talking to him and picking up interest in him. But I think unless somebody transfers that they're not expecting or somebody decides to leave that they don't expect to or has to retire, the two guys that they're expecting to leave are Jackson Kirkland and Wattenberg. And, you know, Wattenberg can't come back. Jackson Kirkland actually could. I don't think he will. So those are the only two guys that are leaving that you know are probably gone. So, you know, you can only have a certain amount of guys on the roster. And the only reason they'd take Connerly is because he's just that good.
Yeah, and you can't overcompensate on the roster, because if you're going to have too many offensive linemen included in that 85, you're taking away from another position that you're going to leave short. Mm-hmm. But Scott, the other interesting thing too is, you know, when you're talking about 15, you know, and they're anticipating some attrition to get them to 15, but the number you've got to work with, which is more important now, is that 85 maximum on scholarship. And there may be some guys, you know, the second recruiting season, the transfer portal, because this is still in its infancy. And you might want to leave some spots open to bring a couple of transfer guys in.
Yeah, you never know. Yeah, you got to keep things open.
Would you rather take, you know, if let's say they're going to take 15 guys, right?
Mm-hmm.
Would you rather take a 16th guy or keep that scholarship for a transfer guy? I know it depends on the guy.
Yeah, it really does.
You've got to think like that.
Yeah, but that's how their roster management is much more important at the collegiate level than it is at the NFL level. And I know that sounds weird, but when in the NFL, you can go out and pick up a free agent if you need to. If you really need to fill a hole, you can go out and find somebody, but in college, you can't. And, you know, you're set with your roster. Oh, unless you're Utah, who loses a guy after starting for three games. But, you know, that's so terrible. I mean, they should really try and figure out a way to get their scholarship money back, but that's a different story. Anyway, would you rather have a four-star out of high school who probably won't play, or would you rather have a four-star who played for a couple seasons in college, who comes in with some experience? Yeah. But is looking for a different opportunity, or maybe there was a coaching change and he just didn't want to be part of that new staff or whatever it was. You know, you've got to look at some of those things. So, yeah, roster management is definitely getting a lot harder in college football.
Hey, Chris, yesterday I had a chance to meet with other media members and meet up with George Kliavkov, the new commissioner of the Pac-12. Really refreshing to talk to him. I'd say if somebody asked me what it was like to talk to Larry Scott in one of those atmospheres, he was pompous. He was smug. He was condescending. He was arrogant, and he never said a damn thing. He would pat himself on the back a lot. That's why I called himself Back Pat Larry, because he would always tell you how awesome he was. But you had a chance to listen to the audio with Kliavkov. What were your impressions?
Well, yeah, hopefully people got a chance to see the story that we put out this morning that let people know a little bit more about that meeting between Kliavkov and the media at UW. And it's been good that he's been here the whole week to kind of get a chance to really talk to everyone in the athletic department, get a great feel for how things are, because I don't think a lot of people know that Kliavkov, the one school in the Pac-12 that he actually was a season ticket holder to for football and basketball, is the University of Washington, because he lived here in Seattle for 10 years in the 90s and the early 2000s when he worked for Real Networks. So, he's got a definite history with Seattle and UW, and it shows. And I think ultimately he had some real candid answers about, kind of the future of the game with football, with the playoff, and how he felt pretty strongly that the committee made a real mistake in kind of leaking that stuff out about the playoff happening without getting a lot of consultation from the entire group instead of just like a third of the group, for instance. He was real candid in his answer about where the Pac-12 headquarters is going to be, because it can't go anywhere for the next couple of years because of the lease that Larry Scott negotiated for downtown San Francisco, and in a zip code that Kliavkov said is arguably the most expensive in the country. And he talked about how going forward, no matter where the headquarters was going to be located in the Pac-12 footprint, it would be in a situation where the majority of that money would be going back to the schools to help the schools and the student athletes out where it should have been in the first place. And he also addressed, obviously the upcoming contract with the media rights and the negotiations, and how things like streaming will fit in, and companies like Amazon and Apple and Google and some of these other companies that are starting to try to wedge into the media footprint instead of just the traditional holders like ESPN and Fox Sports and some of these older networks. So I thought overall it was a really, really good conversation. I hope people get a chance to listen pregame to what he had to say and read some of the quotes that were in our story.
Yeah, I thought the one comment that he made that, some of the old timers' heads may explode, or just not even understand. But he talked about his kids haven't watched, regular TV in 2 years. Everything's streamed on their phone or iPad or laptop.
Yeah, and how, actually how it's going to – it could end up turning out to be a real big positive that the Pac-12 Networks owns all of its media rights right now, but yet he fully admitted that, yes, it could work to our advantage, but overall we're still going to have to take stock in whether or not it balances out all the damage that it did by not being able to distribute as well as they could have early on.
And Chris, real quick, DirecTV?
DirecTV, anybody?
He used the word damage that was done. I mean, he was critical of that deal.
There was a lot of damage done, and everyone knows it, and everyone fully admits it, except for one guy on the planet, and his initials are LS.
Yeah, but he admitted, the damage that had done. So I found that refreshing that he wasn't hesitating in the least, to criticize that deal, where instead of being politically correct. And that's when, it became obvious to me that, he's a little bit more of a straight shooter than we've become accustomed to. So,
as much as he is a straighter shooter than Larry Scott, I just think he has a much more grounded reality in what the footprint is all about and what the Pac-12 is all about. And, for instance, I mean, you asked him about Las Vegas and how that could potentially play into things, whether it could be the headquarters or how important it's going to be moving forward. And, he was on the other end of the MGM rights deal when they secured that that spot for the basketball tournament for years to come. He was on the MGM side of that thing. So he's understood these things for a long time. You know, you asked him about the streaming stuff, and he has been a part of streaming platforms, you know, since his time at Real Networks, and that started in 1995. So this guy has a breadth of knowledge and understanding of the landscape in a way that Larry Scott never did, ever, not one time. This guy already hit the ground running and knows so much more about what he's working with than Larry Scott ever did. And that's really damning, obviously, for Larry Scott. Now, I'm not saying anything that people don't already know.
We got to wrap this up, Chris. Just last-minute comments. Make it short.
Again, I think we've set it up. The main storyline is we've got two teams going in the same direction, but they've kind of gotten there in a little different ways. And now we really get to see who is committed to their path going forward. We've seen Cal want to establish the run. They use an experienced quarterback to move their offense. They seem to be getting it done a little bit. But that defense with Peter Sermon running things, the old Washington assistant, it's just not that great right now, and they're struggling on defense. And it's going to be up to Washington to really take advantage of that, starting with the run. And could we see Sean McGrew being that guy again? I think there's a very good chance that Sean McGrew could end up being the leading rusher tonight.
Scott, quickly, as you're running out the door.
I would say that, you know, Chris summed a lot of it up really well. I'm excited to see the progress that this team makes. Are they going to come out and throw the ball around a little bit more like they did to start the game against Arkansas State? They need to get out to a fast start. They need to get the fans into this game tonight. And I think Washington's going to come out on top, but it is going to be a dogfight. I picked 27-24 Washington, and it's my favorite football score because there's enough to give you enough defense and enough offense to keep you excited both ways.
Just keep it tuned in here at dogman.com. There's just always a lot going on, and basketball is coming up just around the corner. So just keep it tuned in to dogman.com. So for all of us, I'm Kim Grenolds along with Chris Fetters and Scott Eklund. Go Dogs.
Hello, everyone. It's Michael Richards here. You might have seen me on CBS working on their Champions League coverage over the last couple of years. I wanted to tell you about an exciting new podcast that I've been working on. It's called The Rest Is Football. It's me, alongside Gary Lineker and Alan Shearer, two absolute legends of the game. The show combines topical debate from the world of soccer along with outrageous tales from our careers. And I mean outrageous. Just search The Rest Is Football wherever you get your podcasts. All the best from Big Meats.